mine and yours. And you don't want no pressure, what but a backup and withdrawal. Cause trust me when I tell you, you don't want that you can crawl. And you don't want to see inside of my... Chapter 68. One good thing about all that yellow and orange, Katara thought, gripping Appa's saddle as she peered across the sky toward a flicker of movement. You can see it. What happened? The eclipse just started. Did he beat the Fire Lord that fast? It could happen. Most firebenders just didn't do weapons. If Aang had bending and Ozai didn't, their plan could have worked. In a clear summer sky, it would have been invisible. But the world was at an odd half-twilight, made even darker by her eclipse glasses. And in that dark sky, something moved, blue and sinuous as a river of ice, fangs and claws spread to pounce. Repulse Lemur! Why Master Paku called it that when the North Pole didn't have any lemurs? Katara had no idea, but she'd practiced this form until she could do it in her sleep. Raised palms gathered the water from a barrel. The step and turn let her lash out with a razor blade of water that sliced the air between them. And it would have taken the dragon between the eyes if it hadn't dipped a wing and shrugged a twist lower in the sky, quick as a stooping bat falcon. Water sailed past the furled wing, barely clipping a strand of azure mane. But Aang had gained yards of separation, which was what mattered. He leveled out and soared toward her, evidently bent on landing so he could bring all his bending to bear. The blue dragon streaked skyward, climbing only to fall in a stoop between them. The wind from its wings stung Katara's eyes with blinding dust, twisted even Aang's airbending awry, so he had to grip his air staff and arc away to get the wind back under him. It knows what bending is, Katara thought, ice running down her spine, as Aang struggled to swing back toward her, and the dragon climbed for the clouds again. It's not letting him land. It's like Shidan. It thinks. A hiss filled the sky, and blue swooped like a scalded thunderbolt. The fists Katara brought arcing forward raised a shield of water-turned ice over Appa's back. Ivory talons screeched across the slick surface, cracking off a fall of glittering shards. Katara flicked her fingers open, collapsing ice into water that a push of her hand sent up as tentacles to yank down. Wind gusted from a downbeat of wings, tossing the dragon up and away from grasping water. I wish Toph were here. Not that the earthbender could do much in midair, except toss a few rocks where her ears told her the dragon might be. But even a pebble might be enough distraction to keep the dragon still long enough to kill it. The dragons are almost gone. Aang wouldn't want me to hurt it. Given the green fabric of Aang's glider had just barely missed getting sheared in half by a swipe of that vicious tail, Aang didn't get a say here. Katara's stomach lurched, hair flying up to blind her as the saddle almost dove out from under her. Appa's legs beat the air, heading for Aang no matter what her hasty grab at the reins said. Sokka, I wish I had Sokka up here. She'd swear that dragon was laughing at her. Benders needed free hands, free something to move. And between the dragon and Appa, the two benders up here might as well have their own eclipse happening. We made Appa armor to protect him from fireballs. Right now, it's slowing him down. And the dragon was fast. Fast as Azula. Fast and high, which hurt her brain. Almost all the bending she'd done had been on the ground, or at least on a boat. You didn't have to worry about things coming at you from beyond the height of the tallest tree. Especially not clawed, fanged, hungry things, like the one arcing down towards Aang. Mistake, Katara thought grimly, gathering her water into a bundle of razor spikes as Appa leveled out. Left your belly open. She stepped back and whipped forward. Blue scales coiled in a spiral, the few shards that struck true shattering. Katara seized more water from her barrels with a sweep of one hand, the other trying to pull Appa's reins up and away from where Aang was twisting himself through the air to slip past reaching claws. "Appa, listen! We have to lead it away! If Aang can land, he can bend and help us!" Appa tossed his head, horns almost tearing the reins from her grip. She winced but held on, ready to throw more ice. The dragon's luck couldn't hold forever. It doesn't have to, she realized, chilled by another gust of wind as Aang zipped and swirled through the air, trying to get past the dragon to them. The eclipse will be over in minutes. Then every firebender will have fire again, even dragons. All it has to do is dodge and let you throw away your water. The eclipse is a trap. She couldn't wrap her mind around it. Even as Appa's panicked flight took them away from the greenery and palaces, back over the caldera wall toward the sea. How can it be a trap? You can't pretend to be weak in front of your enemies. Warriors won't do that. They'd look like cowards. Their villages would drive them out. But the Fire Nation were cowards, weren't they? She'd known that from the day her mother had died. They never fought one-on-one like the tribe's warriors, always in groups banded together, throwing fire at everything in sight. So, if they were already cowards, and the whole nation knew it, they don't care how they win, just as long as we lose. Like Azula, like a leopard shark, like the dragon, snapping at Appa and then Aang, like a heron would a school of baitfish, knowing the instinct to school together would keep meals in reach. It planned this. It's kept him in the air, running since the sun went dark. Aang can't land if it's going to be right on top of him, and Appa won't fly away from Aang. That thing's not scared, not even of the Avatar. It has us right where it wants us. All it has to do is keep us split up and wait 8 minutes. The Mechanist said the eclipse was only 8 minutes. It wouldn't have to wait much longer. Her world pitched sideways, water soaking her in a blinding splash as Katara dropped to her knees to try to hold on. No, she could win this. She could, despite the dragon's plans, because of the dragon's plans. But only if, too terrified to shake, she let Appa's roll pitch her out into the sea air. Katara! She breathed in, even as wind tore the air away, spreading her arms as she fell toward the harbor. The Fire Nation were cowards. Dragons were predators. Neither could resist helpless prey. Blue streaked towards her, ivory fangs glinting brighter than the hidden sun. Wait. Wait. Gold eyes fixed on hers, hungry and hating. Now! Feet brought together to pull her chi and the ocean up, palms lowered and circled to mold one towering, smashing curl of a wave. The bay crashed down on blue scales, crushing her foe beneath an angry sea. So close, those waves. This is gonna hurt. A gale caught her like a punch to the gut, tossing her up and away from the water. Shadows swooped low. Katara crashed against Appa's armor hard enough to bruise, left wrist gripped by Aang's determined hand. "Hi," she wheezed. "Don't do that!" Aang helped her scramble back into the saddle, pale as she'd ever seen him. "I thought she killed you. I thought I wasn't going to get there in time." "She?" Katara interrupted. It was nice to know Aang worried about her. It really was. But the eclipse was almost over. "Aang, what happened with the Fire Lord?"
"I don't know. He wasn't there. Makoto was."
"What? Makoto? Sozin's dragon? Why would she protect the Fire Lord who'd wiped out her people?" Even if she had, it made no sense. Fire Nation nobles were all about honor. They'd heard Zuko go on about it often enough. How could it be honorable to hide from the Avatar? If the Fire Lord's willing to hide. Swallowing hard, Katara reached for the waves below. The dragon had hit like a thunderbolt, but she had to be sure. The water was empty, except for laughter. There was an ant gnawing on Rikia's ankle, and he was not happy about it.
Shoo!
He wrinkled his nose. Bad enough they'd had to crawl through a field of barley corn. He just knew he'd be itching for weeks. Now they had to deal with man-eating bugs, too.
Go away! Move it, bozo, before I squish you!
An empty threat at the moment, and the wily little chomper knew it. Even an ant could feel the focused will that was Sergeant Kyo glaring at his men to not move, damn it. A hopeless order when it came to Fushi, which was why she and Moriaki were back at the rendezvous to cover their retreat. Rikia gripped his lip with his teeth, forcing himself not to swear.
Oh, joy. The ant had brought friends. Look at it this way,
the firebender told himself, as he had for over a decade.
Which would you rather deal with, ants or court?
Ha, no contest. Ants didn't slander your reputation, arrange for you to get caught chatting up the wrong noble's daughter, or slip poison into your tea.
Life as a marine was much safer.
Most of the time. Sneaking close enough to General Fong's army to hear him pontificate on the eclipse as a gift of the spirits to the world and the Earth Kingdom in specific wasn't exactly safe.
Nice podium he's bent out of the ground there. I wonder if Sarge can get close enough to set it on fire.
He wouldn't be surprised if Sergeant Kyo could, but Sarge probably wouldn't go that far. Setting surface fires that burned grass and brush were one thing. Even a crown fire, taking down whole forests, didn't doom a land to destruction. Ground fire that burned out roots and the health of the soil itself? Bad. Very bad. Besides, getting close wasn't in the plan.
Lucky for us, Fong's a fortress commander. He just doesn't get entrenching every time you stop.
And Fong really didn't get fireworks.
Okay, given there's no noisy avalanches landing on your head, pretty sure they haven't seen any of us. Pick your angle, stick the mount wires in the ground, unspool the fuse.
The tricky thing to figure out hadn't been planning how to pull off what the general and the prince wanted to go boom. The real trick had been figuring out how his squad could pull it off and live. Come back alive, their prince had ordered. If it comes to a siege, we're going to need all of you. So you either come back or I'm going to have very pointed discussions with your ghosts. Which would have been a scary enough threat from an ordinary great name. From a dragon child who'd already kicked serious spirit butt? Even Sergeant Kyo looked impressed.
Just about out of fuse,
Rikia reflected, a tense quarter hour later. Sneaking back through the grain field wasn't fun, but it was doable, especially with the odd passing breezes waving still green barleycorn. Good thing it's still green. We won't start a fire. Probably. Rikia gauged the angle of the sun again and listened. Noon. That's when Fong thinks the eclipse is happening. Should be right about... What sounded like a Jacana warbler chattered three times. Rikia huffed a breath, fire blooming from his knuckles to race hissing down the fuse. Time to go! He kept his head down below nodding heads of grain, but otherwise wasted no time running. Fong was going to have more than enough on his plate any minute now. Rockets screamed. a rattle like clashing feathers wrapped around Toph's knees, tugging her away from the harbor. Boots. She dropped one hand long enough to pet something that wasn't exactly there, turned it into a scooping motion that crumbled a chunk of rock and sent the resulting sand flying into guards' faces to blind them. Where have you been? We could have used you freaking out some of Azula's buddies. The shuddering stomp near her toes was ample evidence. Boots considered getting near Azula one of the stupidest things any human or spirit could do. Again, the spirit tugged. Something in the water? Toph felt at the black hole where the beach ran under the waves. One of the good things about the bad guys throwing fire around was ashes. She could feel them dancing through the air like dust in the wind, settling over everything in hearing range. Even on something that rocked and swayed like the mechanist's metal fish had under the sea. The water got to be. I don't see anything, but that doesn't mean nothing's there. Especially after that tremendous splash. She'd never expected to hear that. Not after people had started screaming about a blue dragon attacking Aang. One of these days, I have to ask Luli if you can feel blue. But now she could hear Appa bellowing, the determined kind of bellow, and people cheering the Avatar, yelling that the eclipse was over and the Fire Lord must be defeated. So things had to be okay up there, right? Down here by the water? Maybe not. Another tentacle thing? Boots made a shuffling sound, like sandals scuffing grass. Probably not, then, Toph judged. Boots wanted her away from the water, but wasn't nearly as frantic as when something had been trying to eat her. Time to find somebody with working eyes. Feels like Sokka's headed this way. And that's Chief Hakoda over there. Toph dug her toes into the sand as the wind from Appa tumbled, surviving home guard off their feet. A push of her hands rippled the sand under them like a wave, surging up to lock them in to their shoulders. That should hold him. And if everybody was lucky, they'd stay held. Brawl, sure, she could do that all day. But she hated blood. She hated dying, no matter whose side it was on. Avatar Aang! Chief Hakoda. And he wasn't cheering, no matter what the rest of their allies sounded like. What happened? Where's the Fire Lord? I don't know! Already heading that way, Toph had to pick her jaw up before she tripped over it. The last time she'd heard that much frustration and confusion in Aang's voice, the Painted Lady had just tsunamied a bunch of soldiers. Look! At least she was close enough. Toph grabbed Sokka's sleeve, feeling the terror trembling through everyone's feet. Wanna tell me what I'm looking at? From his shaky breath, Sokka wanted to run himself. If Momo was one of the Mechanist's war balloons, these would be Appa's. Huge, massive war balloony things up in the air, where she couldn't target them without help? Not there! Where did they? How did they? Katara stammered. The Mechanist is with us. Doesn't matter if they got one of his blueprints, Sokka said grimly. It's not like picking the right tree out of a forest for a ship, sis. It's steel and cloth and following a plan. The Fire Nation's good at plans. They build ships. It's what they do. Toph cocked an ear to the wind. There were distant roars of fire which had to be heating the war balloons. A growing clamor as their friends realized the Fire Nation had come up with some new trick. An odd, faint whistling. Whistling? Katara was shaking her head. The Mechanist never showed us anything like those. Get down! Toph wasn't sure if it was Sokka or Hakoda who'd yelled it. All she knew was that suddenly the world came apart, in loud and hot and screaming. The perishable things of this world might be illusions, Hui reflected, but the Fire Lord's giant flying sausage ships were one darn convincing illusion.
Get us below the surface, Chief Hakoda called to the waterbenders, swooping water past their metal fish to pull them down. They can't hit us if they can't see us.
The metal cavern rocked again, water slapping against steel and bending as more explosions tore apart the surface. Most of Hui's friends and allies were probably wondering if it was safer down here, or if they should have taken their chances in the clear air of the beach. Safety is just as much an illusion as death. From the purely spiritual perspective of putting the world back in balance, though, it was better for them under the surface. Avatar Aang needed more than bending to defeat the Fire Lord and end the war. He needed faith in himself. And Avatar or not, no very young man was going to pull that off if he thought he'd gotten his friends and family killed. Too many spirits have fled this illusion already, Hui sighed. Being spiritual didn't mean he didn't mourn. Flesh was fragile, yes, only spirit endured. But that flesh was how spirits touched each other in this life. When it died, all a spirit's chance to touch those still embodied died with it. Death was a shutting of doors, a crushing loss of opportunities for all those left behind. And Aang's already lost enough, poor youngster. Hui hoped the boy's friends were well. That they were telling him there would be other chances, other paths to take. Because there were. Something moved through the water, and a chill sluiced down Hui's spine. What is that? Shaken earthbenders and southern tribesmen gathered near glass portals, trying to peer through the dim waters as the swampers kept them swimming away from the Fire Nation. Whispered guesses ran from really big fish to trick of the light to there was a dragon fighting the Avatar. Whatever it was long and sinuous and never quite close enough to make out, and stayed that way, effortlessly, even as the air grew hot and stale from so many benders working so long.
It's pacing us. Hakoda muttered. What is it? Whatever it may be, we need to surface.
Still near the exit ladder, G the Mechanist wiped sweat from his bare brow, mustache already dripping.
I hadn't considered the full implications of bending on our air supply. We can't stay down too much longer.
I'd like nothing better, Hakoda said grimly. But where? We have wounded. We need to get to land, not just air, and our rendezvous point is blown. The Fire Nation will be watching.
Hui smiled. The universe might be illusions, but some of those illusions can be trusted. He never missed a stroke, as the chief's eyes snapped to him. They're not watching everywhere.
If you have an idea, Shaman, Hakoda suggested, I'm sure we'll all be glad to hear it.
I'm no shaman, just a man who listens to the web of life.
Hui moved through three more strokes, reflecting on kindness and secrets.
Trust the currents. They'll take you where you need to be.
Though, as a young Avatar had discovered, where you needed to be wasn't always where you wanted to be. And that sinuous shadow still swam at the edge of vision, chilling Hui's spirit. Old hate, old evil. Hui drew a stale breath. But better chasing us than the Avatar. Katara lashed out with another razor-edged whip of water, opening a long rent in red fabric. The giant war balloon listed to the side, spilling hot air, screams, and what looked like glass shards of blasting jelly.
Sokka, we can't just leave.
There's too many, sis. Everybody who's gonna get out is out.
Sokka winced as Aang shot him a look, reins wrapped around the airbender's pale hands.
Are you sure?
I wish I wasn't, Sokka said honestly, which was almost true. The only thing he would have hated more than knowing how badly they'd been screwed was not knowing. At least this way, he could make sure some of them got out. Everybody who could got to the subs. We have to go.
Right.
Aang faced forward toward the sea.
Yip, yip, buddy.
They're flying, the Duke muttered. He and Haru were clinging together. Momo curled on top of them like a clingy scarf. How can the Fire Nation be flying?
Dragons fly?
Toph was gripping the saddle rim so hard her knuckles were white. What do we do now?
What can we do?
Aang's voice was as lost as Sokka had ever heard it. Even losing Appa hadn't been that bleak.
We lost. It's over.
He held it together this long, Sokka reminded himself. I wasn't sure I could keep it together this long. It's not over, Sokka said bluntly. We're not dead. You're not dead. We'll get another chance. Today just wasn't our day. Understatement, he thought, keeping an eye on the massive craft falling behind them. Good. They're not as fast as Appa. We can make it. Then again, war balloons were machines. Azula had already proven her tank could outlast Appa in the long run. Sooner or later, the Sky Bison had to sleep. But this time, Appa's not shedding. If we get out of sight, they won't be able to track us. Which was not the same as saying the Fire Nation wouldn't know where to look for them. If Azula, Zuko, or Zhao had reported anything about their avatar hunts, the Fire Nation had a fair estimate of how far and how fast Appa could fly. They'd know what radius they had to search. And there's only so many islands out there. Still, they have to get messages to the home guards. That takes time, even with messenger hawks. We can stay ahead of them, if we're careful. At least long enough to figure out what to do next. Which would be a good thing, because right now, he had no clue. The eclipse was supposed to work, trap or no trap. I was wondering what they'd do about that, Sokka thought sourly. No firebending for 8 minutes. Aang can bend 3 other elements. Winner? The Avatar. End of discussion. Or it would have been if Ozai had actually shown up to fight. How do you win a fight you can't win? Sokka rolled his eyes at the sky. Easy. Don't let there be a fight in the first place. So simple. He could have kicked himself. What had Master Pian Dao taught him? The best block is not to be there. Negative Jean. Avoid the attack. Only Aang had been taught about Jean for bending, not combat. Firebending was supposed to be positive Jean. Attacking. Aang probably hadn't even considered that Ozai would want to avoid a fight. But I should have. Sokka growled at himself. People aren't their bending. I know that. Toph attacks things all the time. Azula and Iroh dodge. Heck, if I'd thought we were heading for Azula. Well, they'd already seen Azula pick her best option. Attack their people. Attack Aang. But not during the eclipse. Azula knows what Kyoshi did. She probably found a hole and pulled it in after her until it was over. She's smart. Why didn't we think Ozai could be smart? My father, Haru's wince was audible. What do we do now, Avatar Aang?
Why does everybody keep asking me?
Because we believe in you, Katara started.
That's not true. You believe in the Avatar, not me.
Sokka counted to 10.
Twice.
He was not going to dunk Aang's head in icy water until the kid saw sense. Not now. Aang, You're going to say you're sorry, and you're going to mean it. Later. Right now, this was our plan. We screwed it up. So now we need to find a better way out of it. Any suggestions? I'm thinking we need to get out of sight first and think up a better plan later. He heaved a deep sigh. And Aang, I believe in you. If Ozai had been there, you would have kicked his butt. He shrugged and glanced back. So where can we go until we figure out how we're going to try again? Aang swallowed, looked away, shivering a little, stared at the ocean below. I'm thinking. Toph freed up one hand enough to wave. Not real good with maps, but isn't Byakko around here somewhere? Byakko? The Duke asked. Island domain, Sokka filled him in. Huh. It was, actually. Damn, now he remembered the map. They're way west of the caldera, Sokka told Toph. We could get there, but we'd have to circle the whole big island. And Appa's kind of obvious. He trailed off, watching his sister get paler and paler. Katara? She plucked at her water skin. They won't be able to help us. Huh? Why not? Toph slid her hand back along the edge, trying to get in range to give Katara her best listen. Maybe Grandpa doesn't like you guys a lot, but he's not going to throw us to Ozai. Her words died off at Katara's silence. What did you do? What makes you think Katara did anything? Aang said defensively. Because she's not talking about it. Toph shot back. What happened? Katara looked away. Those people who came with Azula, the Chi Blockers, they know he's a traitor now. Sokka slapped himself in the forehead. Zuko is going to kill us. Assuming Shidan didn't get to it first. You... Toph paled. Why? He's Azula's grandfather, too. I thought, well, how else did they find us? The same way they caught us at the caldera, Sokka said grimly. They knew we were coming. All they had to do was look. We're a moving army, Katara. There aren't that many places you can hide a bunch of ships. Damn it, it's the Wends all over again. Subtle. Why can't we ever do subtle? Wait, wait. Azula's grandfather? Haru put in, wide-eyed. You called one of the princess's family grandpa? Azula's nuts. Shidan's not. Toph snapped at him. He's a good guy, and he tried to help us. And now, Ozai's gonna... She curled up on herself, biting her lip. Ozai's gonna be busy looking for us, Sokka said firmly. He's got to find us, and I kind of doubt they built those balloons just for us. So he's planning to do something nasty to the Earth Kingdom. That doesn't leave him too much of the army and navy to spread around. Yeah, that's still more people than Shidan's got, but Byakko's on the Western Ocean. Let me tell you about the Western Ocean. Outside of crazy traders and Ice Mountain tourists, nobody wants to go there. The water goes straight down for miles, and there are things out there. Big, nobody quite sees them, man-eating things. And even if you get past those, Byakko's a tough nut to crack. Exposed to storms off the Western Ocean, very few good harbors deep enough to shelter Navy ships, every landing site known and generally watched, and that didn't even begin to cover the fact that Byakko trained a fair amount of firebenders, Yuyan, and just general cut-you-up badasses. Add in Mount Shiratora and the Yamabushi? Yeah, Ozai wasn't wiping them out in a day. He'll be okay, Toph, for a while.
but he's not going to be helping us either.
Damn.
I've never even heard of the Western Ocean, Haru said thoughtfully.
I saw it on your map, but how do you know what's out there?
Somebody we met had a library, Sokka quipped, which was perfectly true. He hadn't learned about Byakko from Master Piandao's library, but he knew the information was there.
Used to be Temul's library, after all.
One of these days, he wasn't going to be able to use that excuse. But not today. I'll come clean, I swear. But not now. Everybody's upset enough already.
Aang took a deep breath and nodded.
I know where we can go. Remember, waterbenders are skilled in emotional manipulation and psychological warfare, Azula directed her Onmitsu as her ship headed for the smoke rising over the caldera's main harbor. Anything they might say will be calculated to cause dissent and damage to morale. They know they can't face us in open battle, but they think they don't have to. That if they buy enough time for the Avatar to master firebending and attack the Fire Lord once more, they'll win, but they will not have that time. Aang knows what I did to him, and everyone always blames Zuzu when my plans unfold. This time, they're even right. The Avatar won't go near my brother's band of renegades. As for Zhang Zhang, she already had cabbage merchants looking for him. They can't win that way, Azula stated, eyes flicking over Anshin, Kotori, and all the rest of the shadows on Kartati's deck. But they can do a great deal of damage to some of our more traditional domains, especially those my house has decreed are necessary to serve as anchors against the winds of fate. Too much change too fast can be as deadly as too little. New weapons, new devices may make war easier, but the only way to make war decisive is to never forget the core of who we are. Fire Nation, Dai Li, and Onmitsu, I won you because those who claim to lead you forgot that loyalty is not water, to meekly flow forever. It is fire, it must be taken, and then you must lead. And if you're afraid to be burned, you never should have played the game. In particular, Azula went on, our sources say Shidan of Byakko executed a murderous waterbender who'd been hiding under our noses for decades. Not the act of a man who would betray our people to the Avatar, no matter what lies that puffed-up brat of a southern waterbender might spout. Anshin inclined his head, the slightest of nods from the tall, quiet Onmitsu leader. Kotori. Her nod looked the same, but felt different. Anshin believes me. She doesn't. Kuzan was the great betrayer, and Shidan is tarred with that brush as well. Annoying, but hopefully temporary. She knew how air worked now. Tai Li's near-fatal brush with her own teachings was proof of that. Air didn't follow lords. It followed away, and was bound to those who taught it, which explained a great deal about Aang that otherwise made no sense whatsoever. She almost felt sorry for her brother. Zuko had been hunting an airbender based on the idea that the Avatar was at least as sane as anyone else in this war-torn world, and would take steps accordingly, such as realizing that most of the Fire Nation wanted him captured or dead, and actually trying to, not draw attention to himself until he had more training under his belt. But no, Aang had been following the way of his teacher, and apparently, whoever that monk had been had never passed up a chance for a prank, an adventure, or an opportunity to reason with people. Well, sort of reason, anyway.
She'd read reports of the low-scale civil war that had broken out between the allied Zhang and the inhabitants of a hapless village called Liuqiu, whose written records alleged that Wei Jin had stolen the so-called sacred orb, but only after Jin Wei had ridden him down in the street. The reports claim the two refugee tribes were unshakable allies, joined by their faith in the Avatar. But the nearby Fire Army garrison commander had seen the potential in the ongoing battle and won a fair swath of mostly pacified territory by stepping in on the side of Liuqiu. Who knew how long it'd last? But so long as such petty insults of history divided the Earth Kingdom, the Fire Nation would win in the end. As I'll win Kotori, I will show her a way, my way, that will lead us all to glorious victory. Why are we slowing down? And why were the dirigibles still hovering about the harbor, in plain view, rather than returning to the airfield for maintenance after their first battle? Spyglass, Azula demanded from one of the nearby crew. What's going on over there? Not just hovering dirigibles. Something was affecting the way smoke blew over the wrecked harbor. But not from the beach, where any of the Avatar's allies might have lingered. From the city. I'm going to need more knives. Mai loosed a swirl of deadly steel as she ran, four home guard firebenders between her and the new landing field. Her blades pinned three of them. Tai Li landed on the fourth's shoulders in a perfect acrobat's vault, bending to give the poor young soldier an upside-down grin before she jabbed knuckles into the side of his neck. He crumpled, Tai Li already a fluttery handspring away. This is such a bad plan. We're not firebenders. Mai dashed forward and leaped into the war balloon's basket anyway, half-gloved hands turning up the furnace flame to roast the air already in the silken shroud. The only reason this stood a chance of working was because it was a bad plan. Ozai had already covered all the exits for a good one. This is going to break Azula. On the one hand, she couldn't help but smirk in triumph, even with the palace guards hot on their heels. This was exactly what she'd hoped for when Shidan had suggested she rejoin the Fire Princess in the first place. A chance not just for revenge, but true vengeance. To show Azula what it meant when someone you believed in betrayed you. On the other, this is going to break her, just when she was figuring out how to care about our people. If you seek vengeance, it is your duty to be there to drive the dagger home, Shidan had stated, fire a gold-green blaze about his hands as he mended a lightning-torn heart. For if you succeed, then she will truly need you. It hadn't made sense. Not then. Tai Li caught one of the basket ropes, twirled around it, and snatched an anchor line. Momentum landed her in the basket, yanking the last anchor free. Mai gripped a rope as they bounced upward, trying to slow down frantic gulps of air. It'd been a heck of a run. Up we go. Red fabric fluttered, billowed like a luffing sail, as hot air whooshed down and past her face, stealing their lift. Stunned, Mai followed the breeze to a distant rooftop, where a shadow of gray lurked on the tiles, whirling hands about each other. Onmitsu, airbender, Tai Li's not the only one. How do I knife someone who controls the air?
No, you don't!
Tai Li bounced like a rabbaroo, landing in a bent-kneed stance that wasn't anything Mai had seen her use before. Yet, it was familiar. Katara, that's a waterbending stance. Tai Li circled her arms and stepped left in the basket as far as she could, with a toss of her head to bounce her hair and chi in a whole
bawdy smile that was pure circus. Mai caught her balance as the basket skimmed the grassy field, catching on spiderwort leaves before Tylee's stolen gale blasted their balloon full and up. Mai threw. Damn. Darkensteel caught the Onmitsu in the arm, not the neck. That wouldn't slow down a determined bender. And there were more red uniforms tearing their way, lances of fire lashing out toward the basket and fragile cloth. Giggling, Tylee swirled around their basket like a fighting flutter hornet, fluttering and circling and never in the same place if you blinked. The rim of the basket smacked Mai in the chest as their craft leapt skyward. Ow, 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 kill it lots, ow! Trying not to rub her abused bosom, Mai held on and gasped for breath. Why was the air so thin? Like, trying to climb, she had a Tora at a dead run. Sorry! Air flooded back into Mai's lungs like syrup as their balloon suddenly stopped rising. Sorry, I'm sorry, I should know better. You can't make breath come to you. Gripping ropes and metal, Mai filled her chest with air. Wonderful air! She blinked down at a miniature world. Even the lashes of fire reaching for them only looked like flying sparks. How? Just a couple thousand feet, Tylee said cheerfully. We should be fine. Even you, Yan, can't shoot this high. Not how high, Mai got out. How? She lifted her hand from a woven edge, flicking up. Oh! Tylee leaned back against a rope, relieved. Did you know air weighs a ton? Mai stared. No, really, it does, Tylee insisted, gray eyes earnest. You just don't feel it because it pushes down all the time. But it's heavy and hot air makes us lighter. So all I had to do was move the air on top of us and vroom! Her hand sailed upward. Oh, Mai deadpanned. That's all. Wasn't it neat? We should do that again. Tylee almost raised her hands, hesitated. But you can't bend, and that means you can't grab air to breathe. That would be bad.
Just a little, Mai agreed. Took another breath, just to be sure she could.
Blinked and focused. Red fabric. Steel. Too close. Why couldn't you have stayed near the harbor with the rest of the dirigibles? They were smaller than Ozai's fleet. They should be faster. No weight of men or weapons, and not much at all of fuel. And if Tylee was right and air had weight, then the dirigibles had to shove a lot more aside than they did. They should be faster. But we're not firebenders. This was going to be interesting.
Dodging bottles of blasting jelly was generally not the sign of a good day. Bring them in. Get those fires out.
Azula slapped a bottle from the air with a whip of fire, exploding it harmlessly over the sea below them.
More speed!
She knew these weapons. She'd helped design these weapons. That was the only thing keeping them alive. Well, that, the Dailies' aim with their shrinking pile of rocks, and the fact that the captain was properly terrified enough of her to put the ship into the wind and run for open sea. Dirigibles might not have water currents to fight, but they had air.
They're falling behind.
Anshin crouched beside her, Senbon tucked between his fingers.
Kotori's gone.
Azula stiffened. She's dead. No one said there were casualties.
No, princess. She's gone, with at least four of her cohort.
I've been betrayed.
For a moment, the world flared red, then black, full of howling emptiness.
No, Mai is here. Tylee is. They came for me.
Azula drew herself up straight, pushing aside limp and scorched red fabric.
What happened? Azula, you're all right!
Tylee bounced out of the basket, wrapping her in a hug.
Urk!
You're supposed to be in bed, Azula accused her.
But I'm fine now. Everything's fine.
Tylee hesitated.
Almost everything.
We need to get out of sight. Mai stepped onto the deck as if she rode flaming balloons down every day. The invasion didn't have enough forces to get overconfident. They weren't trapped away from their vessels. Many of them died.
Mai met Azula's gaze levelly.
But Chief Hakoda survived.
None of which should have taken more than a messenger honk, dispatched to warn her of her father's displeasure. As she'd expected, he would be displeased. Fire Lord Ozai was the only member of the royal line who had never gone to war personally, and this had been meant to be his masterstroke against the Avatar's rebels. But if Mai and Tylee had stolen a war balloon and been pursued with deadly intent... Mai's hands folded in the graceful gestures of a governor's daughter, and her voice shook on the formal cadence of High Court.
He mentioned respect.
The world seemed to gray. But we couldn't let all of those barbarians into the caldera. There were still civilians in the harbor. They'd never have been able to stay clear of the fighting. It would have been a disaster. We never would have been able to hold occupied territory peacefully after that. All our soldiers would have wanted revenge. I did what I had to for our people. But it didn't matter. It never mattered. I ruined Father's plan. Tylee was holding her, warm and alive and whispering, "Not your fault. You did what was right." It doesn't matter.
Find me the captain.
Mai's voice was grim and wavery, as if Azula were hearing her through water.
Get us out of here.